This is Stateside. I'm Lester Graham. Maybe you've heard news stories about police arriving on the scene and mistaking someone with autism or a mental health illness as being on drugs or being a threat to people or even the police themselves. Sometimes that story ends very badly. Rafael Diaz is a training police officer to recognize and understand how to deal with crises related to mental health. Diaz is executive lieutenant of Kalamazoo Public Safety. Kalamazoo was the first city to bring in crisis intervention team programs to Michigan. Rafael Diaz joins us now. Let's go beyond my basic description there. What is a crisis intervention team?
A crisis intervention team is really two things. It's interoperability between agencies within the community that law enforcement plugs into. So you're connecting community mental health services, local service providers, hospitals, those that have crisis treatment facilities, and all of your law enforcement agencies, in addition to the prosecutor's office and the court system. So you build the relationships within those so that as you encounter people in crisis, you can route them appropriately for the best treatment there is. It's one of those things that after you establish those relationships, then you can start training the staff, those people who are going to go out and encounter those folks in crisis, the police officers, the first responders. And what they then do is start to learn to recognize the signs and symptoms of folks who are mentally ill, and they start to see what it is that drives their behavior. Sometimes it can be characterized as criminal conduct, either assaultive or something else. But through training and through education and scenarios that we use in the training, they start to detect, the different cues or indicators where they start to see that this is really a crisis event, and we treat it as a medical issue and get that person the help that they need.
Let's drill down a little bit into some logistic things. Do you train only police?
The work that I do in Kalamazoo as the executive lieutenant of the training division is to provide training for law enforcement only. I do have a company that I bring that same training to other jurisdictions. And so I've worked with agencies in Oakland County, specifically the Oakland County Sheriff's Office and other jurisdictions within that county, Midland County, the Lansing Tri-County area, as well as Kent County. And Kent County has a pretty strong program going right now. But I have, with the exception of two times, only taught either law enforcement, corrections, or dispatchers and different tenants of CIT.
Now, do you train all the officers in Kalamazoo or just the members of a crisis intervention team?
Well, according to the Memphis model, and that's kind of where our program is born out of, they have a target audience of about 25% of any department. And I guess the underlying pinning is that there's a certain kind of skill set that goes along that would really incorporate the CIT skills into the patrol work, and that's not something that everybody is really good at. I am of a mind that any officer who takes any call for service should have this training and ought to be able to be given the benefit that they can incorporate those skills, because anybody who responds to a 911 call is more than likely going to encounter someone in crisis. So I believe that it should be really 100% of an agency. And these skills really translate into not just mental health, but any form of crisis. You can find folks that have struggled, folks that have encountered different life catastrophes. It could be something what we might consider minor, a Facebook post, a slight in public. It could be a breakup. It could be a divorce. All of these things can spiral people out into different directions. And then, of course, you add in drug use or you add in mental health issues. And what you're doing is you're equipping these officers to have the skill set to engage someone in a non-criminal setting where we're dealing with that crisis event and trying to avert tragedy.
Give me an example of a right way and wrong way to deal with the same crisis involving someone with a mental health issue or other somehow is distraught.
Well, I can give you maybe a best practice. I'm not going to say that there's necessarily a wrong way. You do with what you know. And we know that at least through the police academy system, there's unfortunately only a small segment of hours that are actually dedicated to training the future law enforcement with mental health skills. I believe the actual hours are 3 out of the 594 that are required. Now, most every police academy has additional time and they add in other elements. So that's a very narrow window. But once you get on the street, what we're trying to do is get officers into the class so that they can see how to use a set of active listening skills and de-escalation skills specifically targeting this event. So I guess ideally, what you want to do is you're going to use three general concepts when you approach a person in crisis. And it's tough to discern, honestly, initially, what drives that behavior. So we may go into thinking, because of the initial dispatch, that there's some kind of violence occurring. And of course, for public safety concerns, we need to go in there and control and manage that situation. But as we learn that there is no criminal conduct and it is something likely to be driven by mental health issues or a crisis, what we try to do is slow things down. And we're going to use time, distance, and cover. Once we realize that it's a mental health event, we slow down because we have time. And time is always on our side. By slowing things down, we can evaluate and assess the person before us. We can start to develop rapport. We can clear areas for folks that are in that area that may be in danger. And that way, we can really start to delve into what's driving this event. Distance. We know that the closer we get to someone, the propensity for violence increases. Now, sometimes we have to get closer to people because there's going to be an arrest, or we need to control that person for their own safety or the safety of others around them. And so we can use distance to, one, give that person the opportunity to calm themselves. Crisis events can be fueled, and when you have people who have guns, who have badges, who exercise authority, that sometimes can spark additional conflict. And by using distance, giving some more space, we can let that person feel more at ease as we develop rapport. And then the last part is cover. Not knowing whether there's arms and things like that, we can stay a ways away from the person, but we can also position ourselves in such a way that there are barriers between us. And that improves the safety for us. And then that also means that our options for responding to perceived threats goes down, because if they're farther away and I have cover, then what they could potentially do to me is lessened. That means that I can be more comfortable in my approach and the discussion that I have, and I can really focus on developing rapport and communicating with that person. And then as a part of cover is making sure that you have officers there that can provide you with backup. So if I go to a crisis event and I'm by myself, it's a much different rubric, if you will. My decision-making is based on what I can do as a single person. But if I'm going to have backup, then I know that I can focus more on communicating while my partner is focused on my safety and the safety of others around there. See, it takes a little bit for a CIT officer to really engage someone. You really have to focus and listen. And listening, active listening skills, developing rapport, takes a lot of energy and a lot of focus. And so as a CIT officer starts to delve into what is going on with this person and trying to build that relationship so we can have a peaceful resolution, it means that in some regard, you're going to let your guard down a little bit. And that's why having a cover officer with you who can be managing the safety side will allow you then to focus more on those concerns. And by breaking that officer response into two different areas of responsibility, it means that we usually end up coming with a pretty darn good resolution. And I've seen it in a number of instances with CIT-trained officers who have used time, distance, and cover and gotten resolutions where they say at the end, you know, had I not had this training, I would have had to take a different approach because I didn't understand what I was facing.
Once you've done crisis intervention team training, how do you tell whether the training is working in the street? How do you track or measure success?
Well, I can tell you that I myself am not particularly skilled in the area of gathering data. But a lot of our work that we have done has been grant-funded in part through the Governor's Council on Jail Diversion. And so what they have done is partnered with Michigan State University, and they have gathered anecdotal data from different agencies and are working on a project to kind of distill down what those numbers are. Other jurisdictions throughout the country have done other assessments, and typically they find that CIT program reduces the probability of violence. The number of injuries to officers goes down. The number of injuries to the person in crisis goes down. And, you know, there's a huge benefit to society there if you don't have to use physical force. Obviously, you know, for the family that's witnessing this event, for the person in crisis, for the officer. And I'll tell you that one of the things that you can't put a number on, but the discussions that I have with CIT-trained officers is that I feel better about my interaction because I feel like I'm actually doing something to address the problem. It's easy to put people in handcuffs. It's easy to drop them off at the jail. It's really, really hard to connect with someone on a personal level and work them through a crisis and get them to a safe location. So but that is some of the most rewarding work we do.
You've given a lot of really good examples about why the Crisis Intervention Team program is helpful to the community. But not to be crass, does this save a community dollars and cents in the long run?
Oh, certainly I do believe so. Let's just talk about litigation. So if you're going to have suits as the result of violence, physical force used by an officer, those cost communities millions of dollars. And without training, there are times when you look at an event and go, did it need to go that way? Well, in that instance, it did. But maybe with some training, we could have changed that outcome. And I think that if you look at larger agencies that have those statistical numbers to support it, what they end up showing is that force goes down. And as force goes down, complaints go down, relationships with the community improve. The feeling that when I call, I'm going to have my problem addressed in a safe fashion. When someone comes into jail, as opposed to, let's say, a crisis treatment facility where they can receive mental health treatment, the sheriff's staff must provide for the safety and care of that individual while in custody for what often might be something like an R&O or a minor battery where maybe there was no injury, things like that, different things that we can divert. And so while they're in custody, mind you, they need mental health treatment. And so that mental health treatment has to occur within that correctional facility. So it's a great expense to any sheriff's office that's responsible for housing people. So what you look at is if we get the person the treatment and care that they need and they don't have to spend a day in jail for their behavior, that doesn't necessarily mean that they're not going to have charges brought against them. But then the prosecutor's office has the ability to look at what drove that conduct and decide whether charges are appropriate. And then you couple that with the court system where they have mental health courts. Someone can be brought in through the mental health court system and then directed to treatment. So what you're doing is you're kind of cutting out the jail aspect, getting them the medical care that they need to stabilize themselves and to move forward. Not to say that you're, you know, dismissing any of the conduct that might have gone along with it. We're just looking at it in a holistic approach. And I liken it a lot to when someone has a diabetic emergency. So someone who is suffering from a diabetic emergency and the sugar is out of control, they may often appear to be intoxicated, they may be erratic, they may be violent, and all of those things go on. I don't think that you could ask anybody who said that they were having a diabetic emergency that the first thing that we should do is bring them to the county jail and lock them up for the weekend, because that's not going to solve the problem. The problem is that they're having a medical crisis. And when we talk about mental health crisis, I want to rephrase that and really say that it is a medical event. They need medical care, and that kind of medical care is mental health. And so long as we can do safely and redirect that person to a care facility where they can receive treatment, that's the best course for them getting stable in the long run. That's going to reduce calls for service. That's going to reduce lawsuits for use of force issues. That's going to help the family that has to deal with that family member instead of working with the criminal justice system, which at times can be difficult to do so. We're working with the mental health system that's trying to, you know, stabilize folks in the community, especially when they suffer from severe and persistent mental illnesses.
Rafael Diaz is Executive Lieutenant of Kalamazoo Public Safety. He brought Crisis Intervention Team training to Michigan. Thanks very much.
I appreciate it. Have a great day.